Always a pleasure to be here, and as others have stated, this is a tremendous topic, and hopefully everyone will go away with a much greater appreciation of just how dangerous is the devil and how much that he is still at work in the world today, and has been pointed out, likewise within the church today, just as strong, if not stronger, than any place else. I might even recommend a book, just briefly, that though off of the topic, and nevertheless, you might want to read sometime you have the opportunity. It's God's Chinese Son, written by Jonathan Spence, who is a historian as well as a professor with regard to Chinese history, dealing with a period of about 25, 26 years from about 1839 to 1864, and just gives a capsule with regard to an individual there in China who came in contact with some tracts written by a denominational preacher and then came in contact with a denominational preacher. And, of course, as a result, he picked up some bits and pieces with regard to what the scriptures taught. And subsequently, he became ill, and in his delusions and illness, he thought that he had gone to heaven, and there that God had proclaimed him as a son and thus a brother to Jesus Christ. And ultimately, when he became well, he led in an uprising that it ultimately became, in which he managed to raise a sizable army of better than 40,000 and captured a number of cities. And, of course, it brought about great destruction through the area, countless lives lost, and ultimately, of course, his whole effort ended in nothing, as most of his followers ended up being, captured or killed, but those that were captured were killed. So in any event, clearly a work of Satan. Reflects what a little bit of truth with a lot of error can do, and certainly a capsule of history, even though not within the U.S., certainly in an area that we may not always hear that much about, but does indeed reflect a great work of Satan and the destruction that he brings. We're talking this afternoon with regard to the action of demons within the first century. And this is a topic, of course, that just suddenly comes on the scene as you begin to read the New Testament. But I think that we recognize in the day and time in which we live that just as there is a lot that is said with regard to angels, that there's any number of thoughts that have been expressed both in various writings and certainly within movies, as well as in various religious groups where at least there is the pretense and many people take it in seriously, and perhaps even those who are personally involved think that it is something that's for real. But nevertheless, there is that thought that the demons still exist, that they still have that form of influence in the world today. And we perhaps shut ourselves off in some respects from that and think of it as being something that doesn't affect us, but it does. And what we need to recognize is as we look at a lot of this is to realize that with every error that comes into the world with regard to the scriptures, that generally it simply breeds additional errors, and that tends to grow even more and more, and it spreads. And if you look in many different areas of religion and you see the errors that exist today, you can probably find many of them can ultimately be traced back to a particular event hundreds of years back where somebody begun to teach something that was wrong, and then it spread from there and it grew into different areas. Of course, a lot of it is in the form of superstition. But as you recognize the depth in which some of this can go, you can appreciate that it's not just a matter of picking up on some of these errors, but it is the impact that it can ultimately have. For example, as you consider how far this can go, if you think in terms of the demonic world. And if you are wanting to deal with this, and are considering that it exists, it's going to have an impact right across whole Christianity. And as you can recognize in polls that have been taken, on the other hand, there are people who, perhaps to the greatest extent, believe that there is no such thing as hell. And if you're not going to accept that of hell, then you're not going to accept that of Satan. And if you don't accept that of Satan, then obviously on the other side, it's just very likely going to say that you therefore do not believe in Christ. And you perhaps then do not believe in God. You therefore are not going to take the Scriptures as being the Word of God. And so one thing simply follows along with the other, whichever pathway that you might want to tread. And if you think people aren't greatly influenced in some of these things, do as I do on occasion of looking through the paper, and I know I mention it from time to time, and you probably do the same thing. Just look at the obituary column and just see how many people that are listed there that it says these individuals, you know, they lived a life separate and apart from God, and they're lost eternally. You're not going to find a single one that even comes close to saying that. Every one of them virtually are going to say this individual is now with the Lord, and it's with the idea that the individual is in a place of safety, a place of bliss and happiness and security that's going to last for eternity. So these concepts with regard to good and evil and Satan and demons and angels and good and righteousness versus evil and sin, the world has turned itself upside down with regard to many of these things. And if you look at some of the source material that exists when you begin to think with regard to demons, and you go and look at some of the encyclopedias or writings of this nature, I think you'll find in so many instances that the writer does not go, initially at least, back to the Scriptures. Quite frequently, what you will find is that they will start perhaps from the standpoint of the superstitions that were held by various nations round about Israel or in the world in general of that day and time, and move from there to the concept that the Israelites were merely picking up and adopting those superstitions and beliefs of other nations. Along with that, you'll probably find some discussion with regard to the fact that the Israelites probably were simply ignorant with regard to medicine, with respect to those things that tended to affect people that you and I might very well understand, or at least the people who are doctors in our day and time. But that they simply did not understand them then, and therefore they simply labeled it as individuals who were possessed by demons. Let me say, first of all, with regard to that, is that the people of that day and time were not stupid. They may not have had the same kind of an education that many people today might have, but they were not basically ignorant, stupid individuals. And I suspect as far as superstitions go, we have just as many people who are superstitious today as very likely existed in that day and time. Medicine probably had progressed more than we might have anticipated. I don't know how much of a study has been made with regard to it, but every indication is that at the time when Rome was at its peak, and surely it was a great power during the time that we're talking about, the New Testament days, medicine was fairly well developed. And there were individuals who practiced in different areas of medicine. And, of course, we read with regard to Luke, the physician. And though, indeed, a great Christian, but nevertheless, I wouldn't be surprised but that one reason that he was with Paul and not only writing the events that occurred, but possibly also benefit was made of the fact that he was a physician. We, of course, read with regard to the woman who had spent all of her living on doctors, and they had not cured her. But, you know, we have that sort of thing that goes on today. And it's not that the doctors are not doing their best. It's just that it's expensive. And in spite of all of their efforts, they may not be able to cure an individual. I suspect that a lot of medicine that was known in that day and time was simply lost during the Dark Ages. And only as particularly getting up into the 1800s and following that you began to find more of the modern day medicine. But in any event, this is, as I say, is not a matter of thinking in terms of the individuals of that day and time of simply being people who were ignorant with regard to medical matters. Well, basically, what can we say with regard to the origin of those who are demons? And, of course, as always, though we can make some conjecture with regard to matters, and possibly will do so at the same time, I want to recognize that in actuality we cannot and should not go beyond the Scriptures as far as saying this is exactly what the situation might be. Some have referred back over to the 14th chapter of Isaiah, and without even going back there, I think that most, if not all of us here, recognize if you look at the overall context there, it's not talking about Satan, it's talking about Babylon. With regard to the overall origin, you still are not going to get a tremendous amount, but nevertheless, you might turn over to passages such as 2 Peter there in the second chapter and verse 4 and similar type of statement that's found in Jude 6, in which you find a very simple statement there in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, where the statement is made, "For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment," and goes on, of course, to reason from there. But here what we can very readily see is that these individuals apparently were created beings, as been pointed out by a previous speaker. But not only that, but the indication would be, obviously, they had the capability of sinning, of transgressing God's law, for surely that's precisely what they did. They apparently then had a free will and the capability of doing so. Now, that's not the kind of picture we get with regard to the heavenly home where there's not going to be any sin. There's not going to be any temptation. But these are beings that did sin, and as a result of their transgression, they have been cast down, and they have been delivered to hell or to Hades, delivered them into chains of darkness, reserved unto judgment. So we know what the end is. We don't have to know exactly when God created them, how they were otherwise used, other questions that might potentially arise. But here then, we have them, and they've come on the scene. Now, as you think with regard to them taking possession of individuals, you can raise a number of other questions, which, again, you're going to have to result more to conjecture than anything else. For example, with regard to us, the individuals really of that day and time, and individuals who had a free will, could they have prevented the demon from coming into their life and taking possession? Or once the demon was in their life, would there have been any point in which they might have cast out the demon? Or once possessed by the demon, could the demon make them do something that they would not otherwise have done if they weren't under the influence of the demon? I don't know that I can necessarily answer all the questions. Sometimes it's much, much easier to ask than it is to provide an answer. And one of the things that we might look at and make something of either, whether you think of it as a comparison or a contrast, is to see that in some respects, it's not all that different than what we might encounter in everyday life today. But there's a great difference in that that was an actual demon possession and not the manner of life of an individual, as we find today, who is not possessed in that way with a demon. You can, for example, think with regard to people that perhaps you've even known some, or may even fit your own personal life in some way or other, in which you have a person who may have even become a Christian, and something happens in their life, and they turn away from Christ. And we've had a mention made with regard to an individual who did just that in one of the previous presentations. what we may very readily find is that this individual becomes even worse than they were before. Or you can find individuals who perhaps from their youth, in their early years, could have been just as fine an individual as you could possibly think of, just a fine child. But as they became a teenager, and of course they're expected to make some changes, but you might at some point see a change in their life that you can almost pinpoint the moment in which it took place. And instead of that lovable individual that they had been, they now become something of a terror to themselves as well as to others. Individuals who are destructive in nature, it may be because of the people that they're associating with. It may be something that they were taught in a class. It may be the way that they have responded to their parents or otherwise, but something has turned them around. And as a result, they have become a very evil person. And, of course, you can read about those of that nature from time to time in your newspapers and elsewhere and wonder, you know, a life that was wasted. And now and then you find individuals saying, you know, I don't know why, but, well, or they may know why, but in any event, they've just literally ruined their lives. Listen to what Jesus had to say back over in the 12th chapter of Matthew. And there in verses 42 and following, he spoke first of all with regard to the queen of the south and how she had come to Solomon to hear his wisdom, and then pointed out that a greater than Solomon was there. And he went on to say, when the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places seeking rest and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return unto my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there, and the last state of that man is worse than the first. And we'll stop there without finishing out that particular verse. You can just see it even in some of the instances that Jesus encountered where that the individual had more than one demon that possessed him. But there's more. Jesus then likened that. He said, even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. He didn't liken it to one individual. He said, even so shall it be likened unto this generation. And how many times do we possibly find, and perhaps even in our nation, where that which had existed that was good has changed, and we find ourselves headed in the wrong direction. And I think to a great degree that's exactly what has occurred. Let me perhaps liken it in this way, whether it be of an individual or a generation. It's like an individual who has their life perhaps filled with something that is worthwhile and good, and yet for whatever reason they push it out. And now they have virtually hung out a vacancy sign, and if they don't fill it with something that is worthwhile, then before they know it, it is going to be filled with something, and it is going to be evil. Now, I don't know just exactly how these demons first entered into individuals, but I wouldn't be surprised, and this is merely conjecture, but I wouldn't be surprised but that you had individuals, even if they may have been fairly young. We don't get an exact age on any of these people. We do have one that's mentioned with regard to a son, but I don't think you can pinpoint precise age. But in any event, I think perhaps for the most part, you had individuals who in essence had hung out an empty sign with regard to their life. And as a result, it was easy for a demon to enter in. I might liken it unto this, and that is, you might be a single individual, you've got a home, you've done very well for yourself, but you're living there all by yourself. And one day you come home, and lo and behold, here is another person that has moved into one of the vacant bedrooms. Well, you might be a little upset. But if you don't say anything, say, well, you know, it wasn't being used, and this individual isn't creating any problems for all that I can see. And at least for the moment, I'll just let it be. I can't imagine any of us doing that, but, you know, we do a lot of things that you look at later and say, I don't know why, that was very foolish. But you can imagine, you know, the individual's just using that bedroom, not bothering anything else, and a few weeks go by, and the first thing you know, the individual's also in your kitchen using that. Little boy, more time goes by, and you haven't said anything. The person's using your living room and other areas of the house, and your stuff is being moved to the side. And then that individual is inviting his friends in to visit with him, and the first thing you know, they've moved in also. It's been a very gradual process. And first thing you know, your home is not your own any longer. You've virtually given up. What you could have dealt with quite easily early on, if you had done so, you didn't. And as a result, it has virtually destroyed you. How many lives today have virtually been destroyed because of what they allowed to creep in slowly? I don't know that anybody set out to become a drug addict, set out to ruin their life in gambling, set out to simply develop a tremendous taste for alcohol and become an alcoholic and end up in the gutter or many of the other things that people can do. I doubt very many even set out to be a murmurer or a complainer or a gossiper or one that was telling lies. I suspect all of these things began perhaps some ways what people might have even thought of as being cute when they were small, and it simply was allowed to continue to grow. Well, as I say, I don't know with regard to the demon possession, and will be, best of my knowledge, are not told, but I wouldn't be surprised, but that the individual spiritually had, in essence, hung out an empty sign, and the spirits were able to take control. And, of course, we are not told with regard to this as to the nature of these individuals before they were inhabited by the evil demon. Well, can they do something that would lead the individual to do things that they would not have otherwise done? And there again, we aren't particularly told with respect to that. But we do get a little kind of an indication, as you see in instances such as the two who were among the tombs and how they were extremely fierce, and others were afraid to pass by and to go into that area. I don't know what these people were like beforehand. In the 19th chapter of Acts, you get the account with regard to the individual who was possessed by a demon who jumped on the seven sons of Sceva and overcame them. I don't know whether that individual tended to be of a belligerent nature before he was taken over by the Spirit. He might have been. Can it lead individuals to do what they might otherwise have done? To some degree, yes. But in view of all that takes place, I think that we could recognize that there apparently was a limitation to what they could do, that God did not allow them to do virtually anything and everything that we might possibly contemplate. So many times it was, you know, making them act like perhaps some an individual that had lost their mind, or as we know in some instances of casting the individual down and even into the fire, which if somebody didn't quickly rescue them, no doubt they would have died. But there seems to be a limitation that was placed on what they could do. How far might an individual go? Well, once again, individuals today not possessed in the same way by any means, but you can see something of a parallel in that how many individuals today under certain circumstances say and do things that they otherwise would not? How about those who indulge in alcoholic beverages? Do you think any of those people ever say and do things that when they were sober they wouldn't do? You know they do. There are those who are quite peaceful before they start drinking, and then they're known to become somewhat belligerent. There are individuals who seem to be and otherwise are very moral, but once they have begun to involve themselves in alcohol, it breaks down their inhibitions. and some indeed become involved in conduct that they would not otherwise. I've known of situations where in the military, and I don't think it's any worse there than otherwise, but there have been occasions where I had to attend a function or two where there was drinking, and there would be perhaps myself, and I don't know how many others that did not drink. But I know of occasion or two where individuals the next day that normally were very well behaved and went about very professionally might come and say, did I say or do something that I shouldn't have done last night? Well, did it have an influence on them or did it have the potential? Well, I think they recognize that, yeah, it very well could have had them say, do, think something that otherwise they would not have. So it's not unreasonable to recognize that once inhabited by a demon, that you might indeed be led to go beyond what you might otherwise expect. But in any event, as I say, I think it is most likely that God nevertheless had placed some limitations with regard to them. Of course, if it isn't obvious otherwise, I think that we recognize very, very definitely with regard to them that they belong unto the devil's kingdom. They belong to him. They don't belong to God at all. And yet, as pointed out by James, with respect to them, that even the devils believe and tremble. And this would certainly give us an idea with regard to the nature of these beings and of their understanding of their knowledge and the expectation that their knowledge and understanding perhaps at least in some areas would be go beyond that which the ordinary individual might have. They had a greater insight into the spiritual realm. And for this, you might very well go over into the 8th chapter of the book of Matthew for something of an example of just what I'm referring to. This, if you begin with verse 28, is when Jesus had come to the area where he had met the two who are possessed with devils coming out of the tombs. And as I mentioned with regard to them earlier, they were exceedingly fierce so that no man might pass by that way. And behold, they cried out, saying, what have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time? Now here, hopefully, if not otherwise, you can very clearly begin to distinguish between the kind of things that I'm talking about that occurs today and that which was occurring during the first century that involved individuals that were possessed with demons. Here are these two individuals. There is no indication that they have listened to Jesus speak at all. There is no indication that they have seen Jesus perform any miracles whatsoever. And yet they make a proclamation that even most of the Jews were not willing to acknowledge that had heard Jesus speak and had seen the miracles. And not only that, they were able to also know the future that lay in store for them, such as we had already noticed as mentioned in 2 Peter, the second chapter in Jude 6. Notice again the statement that they have made. What have we to do with Jesus? Thou Son of God, art thou come hither to torment us before the time? They knew. And they are separate and distinct from the individual, which becomes very clear from the facts that follow. We note here, of course, that there were swine that were there in the area. They asked that they be able to then go into the swine. So this is not an individual who is virtually out of his mind that has some kind of a mental problem, but it is an individual who is actually possessed by demons, and now this is permitted, or they are permitted, to go into the swine. So here is a transfer, a movement of those demons into the swine, which, as you know the rest of the story, they rushed down into the sea and they were all drowned. How was this understood? Well, I can imagine the owners of the swine were a bit angry with regard to it. I think there was a great amazement on the part of everyone else. And we know that when these people came and they saw what had occurred and what had befallen to the one possessed of the devils, because now that individual, those individuals are in their right mind and are there, and there's no more of a possession that is being demonstrated in their conduct. And of course, they no doubt were a bit afraid and perhaps again somewhat angry, but they asked that Jesus depart. I think that the indication is they understood full well just exactly what had occurred, and that these were individuals possessed by demons, and those demons had indeed been removed. Notice there's a distinguishment also that's made very clear, because individuals indeed have said at times that, you know, this is a result of the ignorance of the people of that day and time. It's a result of diagnosing something as being possession by demons when it should have been some mental illness. It should have been something otherwise. It's simply, again, a matter of superstition or attitudes that existed in that culture that simply do not exist since that time. Well, if you go back over into the fourth chapter of the book of Matthew, and here we find with regard to Jesus has just recently begun his ministry. And when you get over into verse 24, you begin to read about how, as a result of the great work that he is doing, that his fame is going throughout the land. But notice what it has to say. And his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all the sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and he healed them. Notice a number of different categories there that are there. It's even individuals that, at least in the King James, says they were lunatic. There's many, of course, with the different diseases. There's that of the palsy. And, of course, if you look in other instances that are reflected, you find that Jesus indeed cured individuals with leprosy. He cured the mother-in-law of Peter that simply had a fever, various other kinds of illnesses, as well as things such as being blind and deaf that were reflected that Jesus cured. Very definitely distinguish between common illnesses and that of individuals who were possessed by demons. What purpose would all of this possibly serve to have this occur? Well, certainly it gives an occasion for the devil, who has, in the sense, not been able to demonstrate in the sense in which it is here, to now demonstrate his power. And from that standpoint, we might look upon that as being bad. But as we find in so many instances, God uses that which is evil to accomplish his purposes at time, even to the putting to death of Jesus, and of using Babylon to punish Israel, and then in turn punishing Babylon. But what we have also seen is that Jesus has demonstrated during his ministry the great power that he possesses. He has demonstrated his power over the elements, whether it be of turning the water to wine or calming the storm. He has demonstrated his power with regard to all of the various types of illnesses, even to raising individuals from the dead. And yet in these instances where it's dealing with the demons that are possessed, as they're allowed to do so, he is demonstrating his power in the spiritual realm as well. And there is no doubt that Satan is completely lacking in the ability to withstand the power of Christ. And so when we talk in terms of the time coming when every knee will bow unto Christ, we can be sure that that is exactly what is going to occur. There is no question with regard to it. And may there's many other purposes, but certainly it reflected this. As you continue to look with regard to some of the aspects of what has occurred here, I'm in some degree reminded with regard to the other battles that have existed with Satan, and Job has been mentioned from time to time, and what we need to recognize, or it's good to remind ourselves with regard to that, is that we're seeing a struggle, just as between Jesus and the demons that he overcame. That struggle between Job and the forces of evil, which he didn't realize that was going on. But in any event, Sometimes we don't stop and think about how much was really stripped away from Job. He lost his family. He was a man of tremendous wealth and influence. He lost all of that. He lost really a great relationship with his wife when she said to curse God and die. The friends who came to him, rather than consoling him, tended to find nothing but fault with everything that he said and did. And even those individuals that he before would have considered as virtually nothing now looked down upon him. He was sore from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. He had literally nothing left except the life that was within him. His soul was really about all that he had. And yet he remained faithful unto God. A tremendous struggle then that was taking place. So it is that struggle between righteousness and evil continues even unto day. We need not concern ourselves over the fact that we might be possessed with demons as in the first century, because that doesn't occur. But is there a great influence that can destroy individuals, perhaps even to a far greater degree than what those demons were able to do? Because his influence today reaches to the very depths of our being, not just to the physical aspect. And it is that which can destroy us. And it is more destructive, as I say, than existed then. Let us give our lives then into the service of God. Let us not leave a vacancy sign on our life, but fill it with righteousness so that we are a temple of the Spirit of God and not of Satan. Thank you.